and welcome to Experience the Difference, the European Customer Experience Organisation's podcast series. I'm Christopher Brooks, and I'll be your host. In this series, we meet up with individuals who are taking customer experience to the next level. We hear about their practices, we gain their insights, and we'll be inspired by the work they're doing. In today's episode, we meet Danny Peters. Danny is the CEO of Milky Map, and he'll be sharing with us the importance of really understanding the potential of customer journey mapping using the right solutions and capability to make an impact for an organisation.
Well, today's a real special treat. We've got the co-founder of an extraordinary asset to the world of customer experience management. And that individual is Danny Peters. Danny, welcome to the Experience the Difference podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. You run a really well-known and a very progressive organization, Milky Map. A lot of people probably come across the platform and probably more so than they know the name behind it. So would you mind just introducing yourself and kind of give the listeners a plotted history of how you come to being where you are today?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Christopher. We started 5 years ago with Milky Map, but the history goes a little bit more into the history, back in time. In 2011, I started a consultancy firm for journey mapping. So that is now 11 years ago. And back then, actually, the journey mapping methodology just came up in the marketing field, where it was meant for propositions and new products bringing to the market to understand what communication and what touch points you needed to build in order to reach your audience. I have an operational background. I worked in call centers for more than 10 years within larger corporates. And what I was always trying to do is to connect the outside world where the customer touches the channels to optimize the processes there. And I saw a link between optimizing your front end, your external touch points, channels of your organization, with the internal message that a marketing department wanted to achieve. So that six-step methodology was the foundation of bringing those verticals together and then mapping out the customer experience in a journey map. And from there on, looking where you can improve, how the experience is, and what you need to do in your organization to actually improve the experience on the outside of the company. So that's where we started 11 years ago. And then 5 years ago, I saw that a lot of organizations were looking for digital solutions for visualizing in a digital environment. My focus and my goal was to have a larger footprint in this world. I was jumping from project to project, and I really wanted to have a larger impact. So with a scalable solution, with a software solution and the methodology behind it that we created over the years, it really felt like a good step to create a journey mapping platform. So that's how we started, together with my business partner, Ulf Uyneke. He's our CTO and the architect of the platform to make it really scalable, securely, et cetera. We really needed an architect behind the platform to make it scalable, not only globally as a SaaS platform, but also in the platform itself for accounts. So for organizations, we come back to that later. How can you scale journeys mapping and journey management in your organization? So that's what we do now. We are with a team of 10 people. We have offices in Netherlands and in India, and we serve customers all over the world, helping them with bringing customer experience into a software tool to be able to improve it.
Thank you for sharing that. It's a really interesting plotted history, and someone who's obviously had their ear to the industry to kind of see how it's evolving. So let's just go back to kind of that point where you moved from it just being a visualization tool to something more exciting than that, because I think this is probably when I have a conversation with anyone about customer experience, it's not long before they jump onto customer journey mapping. And then they'll talk about being trained using a tool. And we're talking about post-its and brown paper and the like. One of the things that I'm very conscious of is there is a gulf between customer journey mapping and the practice of customer journey management. And this is something that you're very passionate about, and I'd like to hear your understanding of the difference between the two.
Well, in the first few years, I did only mapping. What we did was we visualized journeys to create an internal understanding of the journey of what customers were going through. And that understanding was already really helpful, that people in the separate departments, in the verticals, were going to work on that improving of the journey. But actually, that didn't work. That didn't happen. What we did is after a couple of weeks or months, we called this client and we said, okay, we did the journey mapping. How's it going? And they said, yeah, it's still hanging on the wall. It's a nice visualization. Everybody still understands what the journey is going through. We look at it almost every week, but we really find it hard to break the journey down. And really, those improvement ideas that came up in that project, it was focused as a project. And the workshops that were facilitated with external people like us, that project was interesting. We don't get the movement in the organization to really start working on the journey. So visualization and understanding is a first step, but then breaking it down and choosing what to do with that journey map is a second step. The third step is, so you have your action plan and you're going to work on the journey. But the third step is to manage it continuously, because that journey is changing over time. A journey changes because product changes or processes are changes or strategy changes from an internal perspective. But a journey is also changing on customer experience needs and behavior of customers due to the pandemic or digitalization. Things are changing in the outside world, so journeys are changing. So that means that you need to implement a management methodology to continuously working on journeys. I always compare it with business process management. 30, 40 years ago, business process management was really a way of not only for compliance, but also steering your internal organization. And that was also not only a project. You do that continuously. It's called business process management. So it's also customer experience and customer journey management that you need to do on a daily basis.
I think it touches upon the kind of the words are scalability, continuous improvement, ongoing management. And I just reflect on a situation I remember seeing, and probably one you see many times, and it was going into an organization, a large telecoms company, taking us into the customer journey mapping room. And these maps on the wall were beautiful. I mean, they were works of art. They could have been woven like tapestries. They had so many data points on them and everything. I looked at them and went, wow, this is incredible. As you said, it would be incredible if it wasn't for the fact they're 4 years old. And we cannot afford to update them. We don't know what to do with them. He said, we had this very well-known individual came in and presented how to do journey mapping. We then got our comms agency involved and they designed them. And that is the end of the story. And you just go, wow, I could understand where it wasn't her work. It was a PS person before her. But really, you know, it's needed the capability that you're bringing, I guess, in terms of technology to help lift it off the wall and help individuals keep updated with it. Because there's two elements you talk about there, Danny. You've got the input, this kind of the continuous feed of fresh behaviors. If you make a change, the behavior is hopefully going to change because that was you're trying to affect. And then obviously the improvement that's made on the map may well create consequential issues or further opportunities. And to always have your brush over the map to be making sure you're understanding what's happening. And I guess helping those around you understand the implications of the change, because maybe in the back office in finance, you kind of go, that doesn't work anymore. And it's because something that purchasing have changed or sales have changed. So this is where we've got to now, is it? Where it's almost, it feels like it's alive all the time.
That's a good example. I recognize it really well coming into organizations when we visited offices a little bit more often in the past, that there are journeys on the wall and or in PDF. And they were created indeed not weeks or months ago, but years ago, and they were still used. So apparently there was something useful in it, but not the data and not the process steps, because they were already changed. So yes, you need to make that lively and you need to make that updated in an easy way. I think it's important to add elements around the journey next to the enrichment that you put in a journey. So in a journey, you put enrichment with customer quotes, with documents, with scores, with targets. So the journey needs to be enriched to make it lively and to make it also applicable for multiple persons and not multiple functions and not only the CX person or the marketing person. So that's one element. The elements that we create around the journey are more the underlying or the proof that the organization motivates to work on that journey. For instance, insights. So insights is a really effective way of getting proof from an outside-in perspective to underline or to give the arguments where and why you want to prove something in the journey. So insights underlined with facts, with research or with documents or with external research or with articles or blogs, that you need to add them to the journey to give arguments why you want to change that. The second one is that improvement part. So the improvement ideas and the actions with owners and deadlines and importance and et cetera. So those improvements that you, in an ideal situation, connect to systems like Jira, so you keep on working on those activities and not only in your journey mapping tool, but also in the tools that are around it. And you keep a live connection between those tools. So everybody is aware of that they are contributing and working on the journey map and improving it. So I think that's a second element of what you want to create around the journey map to prove and to underline the activity of the management, that we're working on it together. I think we'll come back to that later, because it's not only the CX person, the CX manager or the CX consultant anymore that is working on improving the journey. So journey management related to many, many different functions. Giving them all their own responsibility in that chain of managing the journey helps also the collaboration and helps also with the speed of improving that journey.
Makes perfect sense. And let's go back to that point that you kind of touched upon there then, because obviously this is democratizing the maps. It's giving, making it an asset that the organization has. And maybe historically what's happened is customer experience leads or sometimes the insight team have owned the map. So people need to be accountable and responsible. So where does that sit? I mean, you must have seen many different iterations of this, but in terms of better practice, what's your view on accountability for customer journey management?
What we see in organizations is that a couple of years ago, CX was responsible for making the map, for owning the map, for updating the map. And every time that they were working with journey maps, they went to the customer experience department. What we now see is that that has some consequences, which means that you need to have enough CX people to be able to manage that. But also you need to have a strong CX department with people who can handle the politics and what you want to do in the organization. So that was a side effect, is that the pressure on the CX department became huge because they were responsible not only for making and owning it, but also for managing it. And they were not responsible for the channels and the touch points that were in this map. What we see now is that in that chain, in those agile teams or those mission teams that are responsible for elements of the life cycle or a bunch of journey maps together or segments or certain products. So they are responsible for the journeys in those dimensions, that the different roles have different responsibilities. So what we see is that the CX person, the CX manager or the CX consultant, is solely responsible for the facilitating part. So that person facilitates that everything is happening. So that person is not mapping anymore. That person is not the owner of the map anymore. That person is facilitating that it happens. Then you see product owners or marketeers. That function name is in several companies differently integrated, used. But what we see that product owners or marketeers are the owner of the map. That doesn't mean that they need to make it, but they are owner of the map. So there's one person or one team that is responsible, has ownership of the map. So if you want to do something with the map, you have questions, you go to that person. And then you have what we call the participants. So they are participants in the journey management way of working. And those participants, they can, for instance, enrich the maps or update the maps based on qualitative or quantitative information. So KPIs or numbers or euros, financial elements. And from another side, customer quotes or those insights. So you have insights managers within large organizations. So you have participants who are responsible for adding, enriching, and keeping that journey up to date. And of course, the last is the responsible person for the KPIs. So there's a manager or a department. And that stakeholder is responsible for instance, one or more KPIs, which are related to that journey. What we did at Milky Map is that those are viewers. So they have access to the map, but they cannot contribute. They're not a participant. They're not an owner. They're not creating maps, but they need to have insights in those maps to report also in their environment on tactical and strategical level. Yeah, that's the breakdown of the different roles that we see. Looking for owners is one of the most important first steps when you start with journey management. Not putting it in a central department, but putting it as far away as possible in the organization. So further down the line, in those teams that are responsible for changing it, in the operations, because they're responsible on a daily basis for improving that journey. So make them owner of the map.
So you said the CX lead is the facilitator, but not necessarily the designer. So do you have a specific designer identified, or can that sit amongst one of those number of different groups you mentioned there?
When you start with this, it's mostly the facilitator is or an external person, or it is the CX lead that does it for the first time and shows how it works, put it in a way of working document or an handbook and do a small training for those owners so they can do it by themselves. So it depends per organization if there are facilitators going from one team to the other to make those journeys and then they manage it themselves, or you train them and they do it themselves.
Okay, that makes sense. Both ways are working. So does this lead to, I mean, I remember working with a particular bank who were orchestrating their functions around journey stages. They hadn't had the capability to do it before, but I guess with the approach you're talking about, I can now look at onboarding as a stage, and I can organize my personnel to support onboarding. And I might have different customer service teams supporting onboarding to those who are dealing with complaint resolution. I might have different business analysts here because we're looking for different algorithms. I might have different metrics. Is that what you see? I mean, does customer experience management go to that level, or is that utopian, or do you not need to go that far?
Well, it's not utopia. It's what we call the paperclip of CX. it's the simplification of your framework, which makes it possible to handle all those dozens or hundreds of journey maps that are in an organization. That framework that you mentioned, onboarding, I think it's a good example, where we found a solution to connect all those journeys on the lowest level with each other. So you can also prioritize and compare those maps with each other. And what I mean with that is that what we call the CX lifecycle model, it's a framework above all your journeys, where onboarding is one of the phases, what you can design. And that framework is not being a customer, becoming a customer, being a customer, staying a customer, and leaving as a customer on the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the consideration and awareness part that you mostly see in sales funnels and in product sales end-to-end journeys, but it's more a framework that touches all the reasons why a customer has contact with the organization on the highest level. And onboarding is an interesting one because in onboarding, for instance, in a telco or in an internet provider, you install the product. But if you are a customer and you change your product or there's a new modem coming out, you also need to install that changed product. So the modem comes and you need to install it. But I am already a customer. So I have different information. I have a different experience. I need different steps because I already have an account. I already know how it works, the process. So the experience of that journey is different. So there's one journey, I install the product, but it touches onboarding and being a customer. And that's what we solved with our framework, that you can handle one journey touching two different responsible teams for onboarding and for being the customer. If you add data to the model, installing the product in those two different phases, you can find the journeys where that is happening. So in that way, you can connect the journeys and steer from a lifecycle perspective on all your journeys that are out there in your organization.
I guess it requires, this is back to the management, because it requires some very senior leader discussions around the change management that's involved in this, because this isn't just an orchestration of personnel. There's a mindset change needs to happen here as well.
Imagine that you have a complaints report, and those number of complaints, you can split them into the onboarding complaints and the being a customer complaint. Mm. In the past, it was just installation of the product.
Sure.
It was just nothing else. But now if you split it, you can really focus on. We have more complaints in the onboarding installation of the product than in the installation and the being a customer. And you can come up with different solutions for those elements. We now have 14 different applications of this model. One of them is connecting those journeys. The second one is doing your report on complaints. The other one is doing all your knowledge articles. So all your frequently asked questions, if you put them on all those regions why customers are contacting the organization, and then going into the journeys, you can really manage from a lifecycle perspective where knowledge is put out there in all the channels and how it is used. Mm-hmm. And if it's not used or there's not enough content and you know that there are complaints and you know that the journey is not performing, then you have your business case for taking that journey to improve.
Brilliant. Now, there's a lot of rapid learning goes on here. You know, different organizations all over the world are learning. How do you organize it? How do you get fast, rapid learning and sharing of knowledge amongst clients? Or is it something that you just, you know, people are just left to discover on their own?
I always give the example that in the past, when we were creating the functionalities in our platform, we came up with the methodology ourselves and the functionalities that we thought that were good in the platform. Of course, we did some customer research, but it was quite new in that time. So we built a platform that we thought that was good for the market. But now we have our users around the world, and we listen and look to their behavior, and we listen to them in sessions we do every quarter. They decide what's on our backlog because it's their need and it's their involvement as well. Not only our involvement, but the market is also evolving really fast. If you're looking at data-driven journey mapping, and how can we feed those journey with live and real-time data? Those needs are so new that we just listen to them and we do co-creation sessions, and then we decide the user stories and then translate that into functionalities for the platform. So I think that's one element of being able to listen and to translate what they are saying and what they need into functionalities for the platform. Second, I think it's important, and years ago, I was one of the co-founders of the CXPA in the Netherlands. So I introduced that in Europe. And now over the last time, I'm involved in the ECXO. And in that community, we not only share knowledge, but we also learn from each other by not only seeing all the success stories, but also all the pitfalls. So how can you learn from each other? And we do that on a European basis. So that's also culturally interesting how it works in different countries. But I think also the larger organizations who operate in different countries, how do you manage that? And what are the difficulties for instance, governance, if you have a global office, a regional office, and a country office? And that politics that is behind those levels, that's really difficult. So sharing that and just telling others what you're facing, I think it really helps to see that it's not that easy, huh? Because everybody thinks with all the success stories that everybody else is doing it quite easily. So I think that sharing cases is one of the key elements of learning from other organizations.
I think what you've just highlighted in that last piece there, Danny, is kind of the advanced state you've got to with this, because, you know, it's no longer a map. It's no longer just the basics of sharing it in the organization. It's actually recognizing the complexity of multinationals and understanding the politics, or sometimes the different agendas, sometimes stretched by the different expectations of customers in different countries, sometimes by the go-to-market strategies those organizations have. They might have different channel partners. There's lots of reasons as to why. And just to rock up and kind of pull out a visualization tool and say, start mapping and run out of the room, it helps no one. You're better off not doing that. You need to stay and help them understand, you know, you're going to need to be resilient here. You're going to need to connect with people deep into your organization. You're going to need to give them ownership of the map. I mean, that requires that enlightened leaders. And I love that kind of expression. It needs that. But that enlightened leader needs a trusted partner who can say, look, I understand. I really understand this. Okay. I really understand. And yes, there are gains, but to your point, the case studies may not show you all the blood, sweat and tears and the heartache that went into it. Whereas you, Danny, you've been there with, you know, holding people's hands, mopping their brow, wiping their tears away and saying, let's go again. That's the great thing about a community. Having people like you in the community who can share those stories inspires others, but helps them be realistic about, you know, what lies ahead. That's great. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I once was at a conversation where I said, if you want to implement this and doing this maturity levels, it takes you 3 years. And they said, okay, we're not going to do it with you because we take somebody else. And I said, but this is not happening overnight. This is not happening in a couple of weeks. Yeah, these pictures are, and the philosophy is, but we already agreed on that. It takes years to put that in an ideal state with all your data, with all your stakeholders, etc. I always say you need to control on a central level and give freedom on a local level. That's the ideal world, but that's immediately also really a challenge.
Brilliant. Well, look, Danny, this has been such an insightful conversation. I think a lot of people who are sitting there staring at journey maps in their office walls might think to themselves, I didn't understand what more I could do with this, but you've given them just such a level of appreciation of the challenging road ahead, but also the very rewarding one if you can actually turn this tool into a customer journey management and help an organization put it at the heart of what they're doing. So, look, I've really enjoyed the conversation. But for now, Danny, really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much for the invitation.